Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of Forrest Gump by my main man, Gump himself.
Forrest Gump.
I saw Frank Ocean perform the song Forrest Gump at the Grammys. That's the only part of the Grammys I saw, and every aspect of it confused me. I was like, is he really singing about Forrest Gump? And why is he pretending to walk on a treadmill? And why is he singing about Forrest Gump?
It's
and
funny
why
you say
does
that.
Everyone love this guy? This is Doug, everyone. Everyone say hi to
hi,
Doug.
Thank you for having me, Patrick. It's funny you mention that because I didn't watch the Grammys either, except yeah. I tuned in. I probably saw a little more than just the Frank Ocean part, but I saw the Jay-Z, Justin Timberlake duet for his new song.
Okay.
Coat and Tie, I think.
That sounds right.
And I saw the Frank
it's
Ocean
all like,
thing.
Bring it on down, I'm the bell.
And it's funny, the Frank Ocean, the kind of phenomenon.
Yes.
It's like that this guy, who I don't really know too much about, that people love.
Yes.
That they think is like the best thing ever. I know he got in a fight with Chris Brown. I know he's out. He's openly gay.
Yes.
I know he's like the latest it, buzz, whatever.
Yeah.
And I saw this song, and to your end, or to your point about how it confused you, I'll go a step further. It was like one of the worst things I think I've seen. It was so
there was no melody. He wasn't hitting.
He
notes.
Was out of key.
Yeah.
Like he was. I actually thought the best part was like the production of it. The
pretending to walk while
yeah,
he sang.
Like the video projections and things like that were kind of interesting. But the song itself, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Well, but as soon as you saw it, you're like, we gotta do a show on Forrest Gump.
Well, exactly.
Just kidding, everyone. This was already planned.
Pre-Grammys.
It was a weird twist of fate.
This is a PGS? A pre-Grammy show?
Pre-Grammy show. Well, this is a post-Grammy show, but we decided
it's
pre-Grammys.
It's PGS, then.
Yeah, that we were going to do Forrest Gump. Hey, did you guys know that you're listening to F This Movie,
yes.
The official podcast of the F This Movie podcast?
About movies, not about the Grammys.
Yes, exactly. So sorry talking about Frank Ocean. Maybe someday he'll do a movie.
Forrest Gump.
Or write a song about a movie. What movie could he write a song about?
Adam's Family Values.
You can
Adam's Family Values.
Our website at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. You can find us at DVD Verdict at dvdverdict.com and click on the podcast tab. And as always, you can email us suggestions for future shows or list ideas or just feedback, whatever you want, at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
And also a review if you want to be so kind to leave a review in the iTunes store.
Yeah, thank you to the people who have done that so far. That's super nice that people have taken the time out and left a really nice review for us.
Yeah,
that's
thanks.
Super cool. We're very appreciative of all the people that have done that.
Monkey
and here's
shots,
a list of their names
shots.
As sung by Frank Ocean.
70s pop, Keith Holland, who now works
yeah, right.
for the site. So.
Yeah, listen, leave us a good review and we'll give you a job. Kidding, everyone, kidding.
American Graffiti.
More American Graffiti.
Look who's talking to.
Look who's talking now. I'm just going to keep doing other sequels every time you.
3 Men and a Baby.
They never made a sequel to them.
No?
Oh, unless.
Was the little lady the person behind the curtains with the shoes?
I saw ghost. So few movies, like, in a theater as a kid, right?
No. You saw a ton of stuff in the theater.
No, it's like, not until they rebuilt the Elk Grove, and
okay.
then I would go all the time when I could go by myself.
Okay,
I would
your story
see everything.
Checks out.
Yeah. But, I definitely saw 3 Men and a Little Lady in the theater. Not Baby, because I'm sure we, like, rented that or taped it off cable, and then we watched it all the time, because who didn't love it when they were involved in a drug deal
right.
or something.
And there's shootouts at the end of
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, but so we liked that one enough that we're like, well, let's go see this little lady business.
right. That little baby is all grown up.
And again, yeah, even as a kid, I was like, this movie's not good. I know these actors, but they didn't yeah. let my man Gutenberg cut loose.
Has Gutenberg done anything recently?
Party Down.
Oh, yeah, well.
He's on a great episode of Party
yes,
Down.
Yes, however, and I say, oh, yeah, because Party Down is great, but Party Down is already 3 years expired.
Yeah, no.
And
he was
on one episode, I think.
Yeah.
So.
He was on Veronica Mars for a season, but no, I mean, nothing. I think he's still, like, in movies and stuff, but
and
it's
I don't
nothing
if,
that I've seen.
Even in Party Down, I think he...
I think he does Mahoney fan conventions, but I don't know for
he played
sure.
himself, though, in Party Down, right?
I yeah, mean, yeah, yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
it's not even like, you know.
Yeah, but he did a good job of playing himself.
I know.
Yeah.
Is that also the one where, what's her name, got in a bra? I think so.
Lizzie Kaplan?
Yeah.
Or Jane Lynch.
Kaplan.
So anyway, we're going to talk about Forrest Gump. And before we do, though, Douglas, I have to ask you and your buddy, Frank Ocean, have you guys seen anything good lately?
Forrest Gump. I saw New Year's Eve, and I
saw... Did you really? Yes. What a weird choice. Listen, I'm not above it. Valentine's Day is tomorrow as we're recording this. I did see Valentine's Day in a theater, the way it was meant to be seen.
Oh, yeah. How could you see it otherwise?
I disliked it enough that I decided not to see New Year's Eve. And the few... Every once in a while, it's been showing up on cable a lot. I'll flip to New Year's Eve. Like, let's see what this is all about. And
it's, no, it's the worst.
It's, I mean, it's,
I never saw
it's beyond the worst.
I never saw Valentine's Day, but I knew the whole Gary Marshall, you know, concept of all these different actors and different vignettes and stuff that kind of tie together at the end. But I know it's also garbage, and New Year's Eve was, it was on HBO or something, or Epix, and we taped it, or DVR'd it. And our plan was to watch it around New Year's Eve, like, oh, that could be a fun Saturday night, just like, make a pizza and just like kind of not care about what you're watching, not pay attention really. And we forgot about it until, you know, February of the next year.
Now, listen, that would only work if you guys, and I'm not suggesting you do this, but if you kill yourselves that night, like together and like kind of a ritualistic thing, because then watching New Year's Eve becomes like your suicide note, like a forensic investigator comes in and is like, the last thing they did was watch a DVR copy of New Year's Eve.
It explains so much. We watched it, and it was it's everything you think it is. It's horrible. It's poorly acted. You know that people are just showing up for a paycheck and phoning in their performances. It's really, really quite awful. But in a way, like, super slick and easy to watch, which doesn't make it better. It just makes it easy to watch.
And I almost would have said that about Valentine's Day. Like, it was garbage, but, like, it had Jennifer Garner, and at one point she was, like, sort of in her underwear. But New Year's Eve, when I watch it, even, like, the way that it's lit and photographed is so weirdly non-artistic. Hmm. Like, all art has been stripped away.
No, it's like...
And I haven't seen very many movies that have done that, where it's like, wow, they really managed to strip every bit of art away from this process.
It's filmmaking robots, little Asimos, like... cutting together and like setting up the lights and their gaffers. It's just like, no, this is what we've done a billion times and we're not going to think twice about it or the context of what the scene might be.
And I will settle.
I'll swallow. Is that Austin Powers 1?
I hope so, because if it's anything after that, you probably shouldn't be quoting it. No. Just kidding. Don't quote the first one. You know, pretty ridiculous premises, especially from, I like romantic comedies, so I can handle like, oh wow, she's been in 27 other weddings.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Okay.
What's her number?
But, I don't know, the things that New Year's Eve, just based on the few minutes that I've seen here and there, like the things that it was asking me to accept were beyond my capacity.
It's so stupid. I honestly don't, thankfully, in my old age,
like, Robert De Niro is going to die, but he has to see the ball drop on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing.
Right. And here's
the guy from Raging Bull.
Here's I want to say two things about New Year's Eve. One is that
Gary Marshall will be like, action!
You're doing a great job! In my old age, I feel like I'm blessed because I'm forgetting crap.
Yeah.
So I just watched this movie last week or 2 weeks ago, and it's like, I've already kind of forgotten it, and it's I'm better off for it. Like, I don't need to have this in my head.
Let's rehash it.
But number two, what I'll say is that the Robert De Niro storyline, and hear me out and take this with a grain of salt, he actually does an okay job at performing this dying person. But the context is so... right. I'm dying.
I want to see the ball drop. I want to meet the ball. You're going to meet me.
Oh, dear. His performance is decent, but in the movie, it's all, like, very,
He's like, hoo-ah! I want to see the ball drop.
Give me some peas.
Oh, great ass! You got your hand all the way up, idiot! That's De Niro, talking about the ball.
I'm pretty sure it's like, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm a Robert De Niro.
Yeah, he wants to see the ball drop.
I got it.
All right.
His performance is actually not the worst, but again, in this movie of nothing but ridiculous situations, it's like also a depressing, downer of a story. And it's like, it totally sucks. And it's like, if you are just there, I'm imagining not myself, but like the idiots who pay. And if you're an idiot, then pay it. I apologize. That you don't want to see this. You want to see like fun, happy dad and like reconcile with
the
his
girl
daughter.
From Glee date Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, yeah.
I believe I got that from
you
the trailer.
You totally did. And she's because totally Ashton, not a guy in a wig.
Because Ashton Kutcher is also in Valentine's Day, but I don't think he's playing the same character, so there's no actual crossover.
What I will say about...
I believe Jessica Biel appears in both movies as well.
Jessica Biel, I have an attraction to, but she is from outer space. Yeah. She is definitely a Martian.
And she's Ashton a male Kutcher, bodybuilder from Venus.
One thing about Kutcher,
effortless.
Just an effortless performance. Kelso just delivers.
He's still kind of coasting on that butterfly effect charm,
I think,
right?
You're right, yeah. If you ever go back in the past, don't sit on anything. I also saw... Now,
nothing's going to be better than New Year's Eve.
Here's... Well, you're right, but I saw... Hear me out.
All right.
Parts of two other movies. Number one, we talked about briefly offline, off the podcast, is I saw part of Battleship.
Yes.
Which I will posit is the worst movie ever made. And I know you've talked about this before on the podcast, so I won't belabor the point. It's on HBO now, and I'm like, oh, this is also like slick and well-made and absolute garbage, but it might be the worst thing I've ever seen in my life because...
It's weird because it's New Year's Eve for like the action special effects genre.
Yeah.
They're the same movie, but in different genres.
It is interesting. It's funny because I know when the movie like first was announced, people were pissed off because it's not about like obviously battleships don't exist or they're not in the Navy anymore, and it's not about two opposing naval forces. It's about
aliens.
Well,
the first reaction is like,
why?
Hey, why are you making a movie out of the game Battleship? That's stupid. What are they going to do next? A Monopoly movie? P.S. Ridley Scott sign up to do a Monopoly movie. And then all of a sudden it was like, so now you're doing a Battleship movie, but you're not even doing it right?
Right, exactly.
Like, okay.
So it's about aliens. But I think I thought it was hilarious. The one thing they carried over from the game was the grid system by which to attack the opposing force. Yeah. We're not keeping with the navies fighting navies and ships fighting ships. It's going to be aliens for sure. But we're going to use, like, A, F, and you sank my bat. It's so goddamn dumb. I hate it. And I tuned out. I turned it off.
And
I'm like,
Peter Berg, I've kind of liked a lot of his movies.
What else has
movies.
He done?
He did Very Bad Things.
Oh, yeah.
He did The Rundown. He did Friday Night Lights. He did The Kingdom. Movies that are, like, good to decent. All of them watchable. And then he made Battleship. And the fascinating thing about Battleship is, like, we did a podcast a long time ago on Pearl Harbor, and we talked about how much Michael Bay just, like, sucks off the military and, like, America. Peter Berg is, like, makes Michael Bay seem restrained in the way that he fetishizes, like, the military. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's really bad, and honestly, I mentioned before about how I've forgotten New Year's Eve. I'm now at a point in my life, too, where at one point in my life, I felt like I needed to, if I started a movie, I felt like I needed to finish it.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, well, I'm devoting an hour and a half or 2 hours to this. I turn it off, and I feel nothing but good vibes about that.
Yeah, you probably made the right choice.
Which leads me to the third thing I partially saw, which was The Iron Lady, which I only watched about a third of before I'm like, I am not watching this anymore. It's not good. It's a bad movie.
I haven't seen The Iron Lady, so I can't
Streep, I think even what I read online is that Meryl Streep doesn't, and she won the Oscar, which is, I mean, take that for
which
what it's worth.
Crazy.
Well, she does
it supposed to be someone else? Wasn't it like, so-and-so is a lock? And then Meryl Streep was an upset.
Well, then Elizabeth Taylor went, Gloria!
I don't remember who was supposed to win.
I don't know either. Who remembers, like, the stupid Academy Awards a year after they happen? They're so goddamn dumb. I hate them so much.
I do.
But my point is, she won the Oscar.
I don't even know what won Best Picture last year.
The Artist?
Yes.
That's, I mean, again, it's like, who cares?
I still don't remember who was supposed to win Best Actress, but yeah, you're right.
So she won for Best Actress. She is actually good in the movie.
Yeah, of course.
The movie is really stupid. I was in this weird mood where I'm like, I want to watch something that takes place in the 80s and is British. And I swear to God, that was two things I was like jonesing for.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
you're like,
Queen.
Where's my VHS copy of The Young Ones from MTV? Remember?
I don't want a movie that's from the 80s.
Oh, got it.
I want a current movie that's about the 80s.
Oh,
no, it's a very, so like The Queen.
Got it.
Like The Queen is definitely a movie where it's like, well, this is like, has a vibe, an 80s vibe, whatever. And it's British. So I'm like, I put this on thinking it's going to be an interesting expose in her life. She's an interesting political, historical figure. It's more about her in her older age going through dementia with flashbacks of her career that are much too short.
How can we trust those flashbacks if she's going crazy?
Exactly. That are much too short.
She remembers the time she fought alien robots on a battleship.
It happened in the Falklands.
You're like, I think my DVR messed up.
Anyway, I was after watching her perform, I'm like, well, she is an excellent actress. She is the Daniel Day-Lewis.
She's a national treasure.
She is. British treasure? You mean because she was doing an accent?
No, I mean she's in national treasure. Nice. I'm sorry, I'm confusing her with Helen Mirren.
So I turned it off because it was like, well, I don't care to see the end of this. I don't care to see how it ends. I don't like the way it's shot. I don't like the way it's directed. I think it's a pretty boring story. I was bored.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. Patrick, what have you seen lately?
Wow. Okay.
Paranormal Activity 4, you mentioned earlier.
I did. As long as we're talking about boring movies that are garbage.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. Again, the Paranormal Activity franchise, like, all it has to do is be, I don't know, kind of scary. Because they're barely movies, right?
Right.
It's like walking through a haunted house. Like, five people will jump out at you and go, boo, and you'll go, ah, and you'll walk out and you'll be like, that was kind of fun. Let's get McDonald's. Like, right. And you've already forgotten it. And that's Paranormal Activity. And they made the first one and I enjoyed it.
Sure.
And then they made the second one and I didn't enjoy it because I thought, like, it just was a bad version of the first one, but with way more mythology. Because that's always good. And then they made the third one, which was like, hey, we figured out how to do this again. And it was a lot of fun. And now those same guys, the catfish guys, made the fourth one. And decided to go another way, and the way they decided to go was, let's have nothing happen ever. Let's just make this a movie where people talk into webcams. That's their big innovation. Everything's on webcams.
Oh.
It doesn't change the aesthetic of the movie. It doesn't change the plot. It doesn't have anything to say about webcams or technology.
Is there a scene in which the exchange student goes, I do like your dirty magazines.
There is that scene. I believe... shaved is the expression.
Oh no. Get out of here.
American Wedding, everyone. American Wedding.
American wedding.
So Paranormal Activity 4 is a garbage movie that I am glad to have seen. I saw Side Effects.
The new I know Adam Soderbergh Riske movie. Wrote a review on that.
He did at fthismovie.net. It's good. It's not great, and I know I'm placing some unfair pressure on it because this is supposedly his last. He's got one more movie, this HBO Liberace movie.
With Michael Douglas, right?
And Matt Damon, yeah. This is his last sort of theatrical movie, so of course you want it to be like, I want you to go out with your best, and it's kind of like minor.
So it's like Soderbergh. Ocean's 13.
I mean, it's a little better. I kind of like Ocean's 13, but...
Weirdo.
It's good. It's very, I mean, he's such a good director that, like, he takes a script that is problematic and makes it great. Like,
sure.
Because he's just super talented.
It's tough, though, too, because on the heels of Magic Mike and Haywire, two kind of minor
and
movies.
And Contagion.
I thought Contagion was actually really sound.
Me,
and
too.
Really like, solid. And but Haywire and Magic Mike, I know you love Magic Mike, but I think it's kind of like, and even saying this, I feel like I have to qualify it, like lesser Soderbergh. Like, they're not big movies, but they're excellently done.
Right.
But you, so you want this one to be like, his grand finale.
And it's good. I can't talk about it much without spoiling it, but let me just say, they made a lot of this kind of movie in sort of the mid-90s. And the longer the movie went on, the more I was like, is that what this is? This is one of those? And that's all I'll say.
Okay.
But
I know
it's
lots
good.
Of twists.
It's good, really good performances from a couple people. Jude Law is actually really good in it. Rooney Mara, your girl, is good, fine.
Side Effects.
Liked her Side better than in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, a movie I did not like.
Well, I liked her a lot. I like parts of that movie.
You would like parts of Side Effects.
Really?
And it was good. I'm
she's not all tattooed and pierced and shaved and she's still
not,
naked?
I believe shaved is Steve Soderbergh's a really good director. I'm sad that he's retiring, so that blows.
Do you think that's a real thing?
I don't know. I think for now it is.
I'm asking what you think.
But then it'll be kind of annoying when he's like, I'm coming out of retirement for Ocean's 14.
No, I'm coming out of retirement for the Washington Wizards.
New Year's Eve. Yeah, right? Oh, man.
Everyone forgets that Joe Montana's last team was the Kansas City Chiefs. You know? Like, come on, Soderbergh. Just stick in the game.
I rewatched Red, but I guess we don't have to talk about that.
Red? Because you want to watch Red 2, which comes out this spring?
Or the summer or the fall. I have no idea. I think in the spring.
This year.
I like that trailer, though, and I want to like the movie. And this was maybe the second, probably only the second, maybe the third time I've seen Red. The first half hour of that movie I like so much. And I'm like, this is better than I remember it. And then it's like, oh, it goes on. And it's not as good for the next 90 minutes. I saw a movie called Iron Sky.
Oh, yeah. The Nazis alien movie? Or?
Kind of, yeah. It's like after World War II, the Nazis escape to the moon where they build a base and like build up their forces for years and years and years.
What
and
a great
return
concept.
In like 2012 or 2000, it might be the future, like 2017 or something.
Okay. That's a fun, like, I think that's kind of fun. Like that could be a novel B type movie.
Yeah. No. It's all concept execution. It's not good. As soon as they showed like the clip of the US president who was never named, but it's like a woman with brown hair pulled back and glasses and like a red blazer. It's like, yeah, Sarah Palin jokes. Good.
Oh, that's, wow. It's a foreign movie too, right?
I mean, maybe
it was like foreign producers or foreign
production. I believe so. I mean, it's in English except for when they're speaking Nazi. But,
right. I did not see that coming.
It is in English. It's not good. It's on Netflix Instant if you want to see for yourself how not good it is. And the last movie I'll talk about is Warm Bodies.
Oh yeah. Okay.
The new Zomcom, as I call it. Let's make that go away. Like Zom in front of everything needs to fuck off. Jonathan Levine, who made 50-50, your favorite movie?
Sure.
It's your favorite. You like it about halfway.
Kind of.
What would you say you are like?
50-50.
50-50. About zombies, a zombie who falls in love with the girl and starts to experience changes based on that.
Again, a great concept. I remember the trailer was like, this is novel.
It's based on a book, I think. Maybe like a young adult book or maybe just a book. I don't know. Maybe the Bible. I'm not sure.
Your bookie book?
I believe my bookie book.
The Bible.
The
Quran.
It's very frustrating because it doesn't totally work because I said this on the podcast that we did on the faculty with Alex, like, if you're going to do something that's sort of fantastical, whatever it is, you have to sort of have some rules. That doesn't mean you have to, like, lay them out with characters in dialogue, like, here's how it is, here's it.
Right.
Like, fucking Lost Boys or whatever, just like, some explode, some implode, none of them go quietly. Like, that's my Edgar Frog. Thank you. You don't have to lay them out, but, like, you need to have some rules and then adhere to them. And this movie doesn't. And it's very sort of sloppy in terms of its construction and the way that it's edited. There's long stretches where you're like, boy, nothing really seems to be happening. But then there's all these other things that are really great.
Who's the female lead in that?
Teresa Palmer.
Oh, yeah.
The hotter, more Australian Kristen Stewart.
That's right, who also gets naked, so you give her credit for that.
she's good, and the boy, Nicholas Holt, who was the kid in About a Boy, and is older now, he's good. It's frustrating, because there's things in it that I really like, and I think, ultimately, I come down on the side of liking the movie overall.
Okay.
But it's a mess, and it has all these...
So qualified thumbs up.
Yeah, if we're allowed to do that, and I'm pretty sure we are.
no one's going to tell me what I can or cannot do with my own thumbs, okay?
Frustrating movie, but I did end up liking it. There's things in it that are so great, and then there's a lot of things that you're like, oh, be better.
Yeah. That's anyway. Most movies.
Yeah. Like New Year's Eve.
Oh, it's New Year's like Eve has New Year's none of Eve. That.
What? No.
No, it's all good.
You said there were scenes.
De Niro.
He wants the ball.
Brings
to drop.
It.
Yeah.
He brings it.
Yes.
Is all I'm saying.
Yes. Do you want to talk about Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump. I think we should at 23 and a half minutes.
Yeah. Well, we talked about a lot of movies. People like that section.
Do they?
Maybe when we're recommending stuff, not more like, stay away from these seven movies.
But they might appreciate that. Are like, you know, kind of cautionary tales about these movies. Like, don't do what I did.
But like, what are the chances anyone was even going to encounter Iron Sky so as to know that they should avoid it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
we both disliked an Iron movie this week. Interesting. OMF this movie.
What do you think about Iron Man 3?
I'd rather see Rocketeer 2 than Iron Man 3.
What about
my name's Adam Risky.
What about Iron Giant?
Super.
The man with the iron fists?
I like them all. Man of the Iron Mask?
It's all right.
Forrest Gump. What is this movie about? What is Forrest Gump about?
It's about a special...
But I mean, what's the point?
Sweetly retarded man.
Yeah?
Who... What do you mean, what's the point?
Like, I know the plot. I know, like, what it's about. But what is it about? What is it, like, what is it trying to say?
I don't... Okay, here's the thing. I don't know. This is a movie that, like, rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
It's very divisive.
Like, even as far back as 94 when it came out, people were like, oh, I hate Forrest Gump. And I think people have only grown to hate it more since then. It got all this critical acclaim.
Well, those people who disliked it from the get-go, yeah, they'll have kind of steeled themselves
in even further. But I think even now, you know, in constant reruns on TNT, people are just like, what is with this movie? It didn't deserve all these Oscars and all this stuff. I don't know how I feel about it, because I hadn't seen it in a long time, and I liked it when I saw it in 94.
Yeah.
And I've seen it maybe two or three times since then, and it had been a long time, and so I watched it for this podcast, and I wasn't looking forward to it, and I don't foresee myself ever in a mood to, like, watch Forrest Gump again. I really like Robert Zemeckis. He did, after all, make Back to the Future 3, and and I love Tom Hanks, and, you know, I'm indifferent on Gary Sinise, but, so I should like it, and I like the time period, and I like the music. There's all these things that I like about it, and I liked the movie Once Upon a Time. I'm not here to say, like, ooh, it doesn't hold up, and I no longer like it. Like, I almost don't have an opinion on it. It's this weird... It is, it's just, it's Forrest Gump. Like,
it exists.
I have no opinion on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was this thing that I liked. Now I'm indifferent towards it. What difference does it make? It's fucking Forrest Gump.
It's interesting because at the time I did some kind of, some basic research before the show. Just looking at like how people,
you're like critics. Forrest is spelled with two R's.
Exactly. how different critics responded to it. Like Ebert liked it a lot. And he makes some interesting points about how it's unlike anything you've seen before up until 1994, which I'm sure was true. And it's kind of like its own thing. It, like you said, it's just, it kind of exists as an island, and it's, you either like it or dislike it. But the people who dislike it, I know, like, Pauline Kael was really anti-Forrest Gump.
Yeah, but she died pretty soon after. So.
And Owen Gleiberman, which is not surprising because he is just lives to be contrarian half the time. But at the same time, their criticism of it is incredibly valid. Like, that they don't like how it just is kind of a pop melodrama that kind of glosses over a lot of things, and it's a very kind of neatly digestible relic or kind of rewriting history and, you know, and all these things that aren't real. And to that end, I think that, yeah, I think all those things are true. I come down, you know, to use your expression, I come down on the side of liking it still. Mm-hmm. And it feels to me like a movie that while I don't think I'll seek out and say, like, I'm in the mood to watch Forrest Gump, if it's on, I could easily see myself just leaving it on because
so it's like a total New Year's Eve.
It's a total NYE. It's so easy to watch and write and deliberately so. I mean, it's made so deliberately in such a way that like every musical cue, and if you don't like this one period or this one scene or this one actor, just wait 5 minutes because it's going to jump ahead 10 years.
This guy
is
going to lose his legs.
Right.
It's crazy in its construction because you don't realize until you sit down to really analyze it. Like, it's essentially a two-hour montage.
Yeah.
Cobbled together with voiceover. Like, and then I did this, and then I did this, and then this happened. And that's how the whole movie is until really the last couple minutes, and then you're sort of caught up in real time.
Right.
And you watch a few scenes unfold. The problem with... It's not the problem with the movie. I understand the people that object to it. They just feel like it's this syrupy garbage with the music and the
right.
sweetly retarded lead and like the, you know, all the objections that people have. My feeling about the movie since the first time I saw it was always that it's not exactly the movie that people are saying it is. When it came out, all these people were up in arms because they thought like it just has this simplistic message where anyone can succeed in America, even someone as simple-minded or whatever right. as Forrest Gump, you know. And I always felt like the movie was more subversive than that, and maybe that's just because I was sort of a fan of or a student of Robert Zemeckis, but I always felt like the point of the movie was actually like anyone can succeed in America.
Like, stressing a different syllable.
Yeah.
Making the definition
like that it was
different.
Sort of critical. That
sure.
like, look at how far this guy gets on luck and coincidence. And watching it this time, when it started, I was immediately like, it starts with that feather floating down and
yeah.
him watching it on the bus stop. And I was like, nope, I was wrong. This movie is saccharine garbage, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think it is. The problem is I think the movie tries to have it both ways, because I think it does have a lot of that saccharine nonsense.
Sure.
But there are a lot of scenes that I think really support my theory.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think it is definitely critical of American history. It definitely, I mean, it rewrites some of it, but the way that every so often he drops in this commentary about like, oh, and that guy died. Oh, and that guy died. I mean, it's this recurring theme that like very specific people, historical figures are murdered or mm-hmm. die of a drug overdose. I mean, there's like this tragedy that's sort of layered throughout. Sure. Like, look at this cycle that we have.
Yeah, the everyone. Kennedys and George Wallace and John Lennon. Yeah.
Right.
There was a whole cutscene or a whole, I think they might've filmed it with Martin Luther King also. That was not.
Where he was standing on the balcony with him.
I don't
know. He's like, we should probably take this out.
He's like in the ice bucket, like, where's the ice machine, Dr. King? And he gets shot.
You guys, this is in bad taste.
This is horrible taste, right.
And, you know, I think part of the problem, too, in 94 was that it represented sort of this dichotomy because this was the year that Pulp Fiction came out. And Pulp Fiction is new Hollywood. Pulp Fiction is the future. And Forrest Gump feels very much like classical old Hollywood. And so to see all the critical attention and awards, specifically the Oscars, go to Forrest Gump, people feel like, well, you guys are just still entrenched in this sort of old way of thinking. Meanwhile, that's exactly the way things are still going. So yeah, that's say, never like, going
to
change.
I think we had a conversation when the King's Speech won, and it's like, no, you can right. award it to Social Network. You can be a right. progressive,
right.
forward-thinking organization, right. but they still fall back on a silent movie in black and white
right.
in 2012 or 2011.
And while I will agree that Forrest Gump is certainly classical in a lot of its storytelling and certainly in its approach and just casting this.
It's very conventional. Leading man. Yeah.
yeah, but I don't think everything that it has to say is as sort of old fashioned.
No,
as,
I don't think so either.
People have always accused.
You can even
it.
Argue in very kind of superficial way, just in terms of its technology, which, you know, it's now 19 years old.
Wow.
Right, crazy.
I'm old.
It's kind of funny, just a quick side note. I was thinking, like, the movie, the current scenes in Forrest Gump, in yeah. quotes, are in, I think, 81 and 82.
Yeah.
When he's going to meet Jenny and his son and all that stuff.
Oh, spoilers.
Oh, sorry. and I'm thinking, like, okay, if that was 2013, that would be like him, we're flashing back to 2002. But 82 felt so,
right.
it just, I don't know, I'm trying to think, yeah. like, it's that people make that comparison due to Back to the Future, how they go from 85 to 55,
right.
now would be, you know, 2015, and that's like right around the corner. Anyway, but the technology, and of course it's dated, it's 19-year-old CGI with, I think, Industrial Light and Magic did that. The mouth moving and the feather floating right. and stuff, it doesn't quite hold up, but Robert Zemeckis has always proven, I know in Castaway, I saw some special features with Castaway, and it's like he kind of fucks with everything. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He'll change skies and change,
right.
like, literally every pixel might have some kind of effect on it, which, you know, speaks to, like, his kind of, I guess, controlling, I don't know, like, how much he wants to control the picture or whatever.
Well, but, you know, which is evidenced by the fact that he switched almost entirely to motion capture for, like, over 10 years
right.
because
but
he,
have
could
you seen Beowulf?
He could control every single right. aspect. And, you know, Forrest Gump, in some ways...
What?
feels like Zemeckis decided to do it because he could do that special effect over and over again.
Yeah.
But I do feel like he's always been, for the most part, good at marrying the technology that he's trying to push forward with the story. One never seems... I mean, Death Becomes Her, which is an entertaining movie, is a movie that feels like it's driven by the effect. Like,
sure.
we can do this, let's make a movie around that. And some of his later motion capture stuff is like the service... The effects are not there to service the story. It's vice versa.
Yeah.
And I don't think in Forrest Gump, I don't feel like the effects are what's driving the story necessarily.
No. I mean, it's based on a book.
Right.
And I haven't read the book.
Me either.
It's, I think, Warren Groom.
Books.
Booky schmook. I know that the book, from what I read too, is that the book is different in that they, it's a little more cynical and Forrest Gump is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the main character, Forrest Gump, is a little more. Knows what he's doing and a little, not manipulate, doesn't manipulate stuff, but in the movie, it's a very deliberate choice to make Forrest Gump, like,
right.
the most honest, innocent, ignorant, you know, kind of subject of everything. So, but I guess in the book, it's a little more like,
Forrest Gump's a total a-hole.
I don't know. I never read it, but
he kills Jenny.
No, but and also in the book, the historical stuff
starts Vietnam.
The historical stuff was paramount, and the love story was the B line. And in the movie, the love story is kind of like what is the thread that, and the historical stuff just kind of happens.
Right. The love story, the way that it keeps resurfacing, is a little bit problematic.
Yeah, no, it's incredible to watch it. Even now, like, I don't really have an emotional tie to Forrest Gump.
No, me either. But, except that it's Tom Hanks.
Well, exactly, and he does do an excellent job, like, of playing
That he's great, like, because we love him because he's Tom Hanks, and he makes this character that should be insufferable, right? Is that the...
Yeah.
In the hands of another actor, that character
would be reminds me of Tropic Thunder, when it's like going the full retard versus going
Think about Sean Penn in I Am Sam or something. Just like, I can't watch this. This is embarrassing. And Tom Hanks doesn't do that because he engenders so much goodwill and he does a good job of like finding the humor.
And he reins it in when it needs to be reined in.
His timing is so great on certain things. And like, but at the same time, he was given an Oscar for the performance. And again, not to keep falling back on the Oscars as a measurement of quality, but like, the character's pretty one note by design, but well, like,
can you also make
it's
the argument,
a one note character.
It's the same thing with Rain Man, though. I mean, Dustin Hoffman performed.
Oh, I have huge problems with that.
Exactly. he was Rain Man and is one note the entire movie. In fact, you've talked about the Patrick Bromley, the champion of the ambitious failure, and the guy who points out the things that, like, no, Tom Cruise, who is a really, like, underrated kind of actor, especially in Rain Man, does a performance and actually grows as a character and does all these things. And he's the one that is the emotional connection. He's the one that we want.
Dustin Hoffman is banging a fork against a table for 2 hours.
Right.
Like,
and so
that's it.
I don't think Forrest Gump is quite like that, but it's not too far off.
Right. It's a one note character.
Cause we do have like, it's a little more emotional connection to it. My point with the whole love story thing was that I have no emotional connection to this movie aside from just liking it and remembering fondly of the time it came out. In fact, it came out on VHS on video when I was working at Blockbuster, my first job when I was 16. I think it came out in the summer of 95, and it was like, we had, you know, remember Blockbusters used to, like, all the new releases were on the outside walls, and the biggest movies, there were 150 of them.
Right.
And I want to say it took up, like, you imagine like an IKEA Billy shelf, it took up like 7 of those, and it was like half the wall was Forrest Gump, and they were always rented out.
Yeah, which is amazing to me, because I always thought that was a movie that, like, everybody saw.
Right.
But that's not true, because the people that, like, really frequented the Blockbuster were people who didn't necessarily go to movies. They waited for everything to come to video, so it was like, ooh, Forrest Gump is out. That's, of course, the movie that everybody wants to see, and apparently didn't go to the theater to
I think people also did it double-dipped. I mean, I think that it definitely has that repeat watchability.
Some more of that Gump.
I think it has that watch repeatability, though. Yeah. I think that, if nothing else, we talked about briefly the music and all that stuff. It just, especially for maybe some older people who lived through some of those moments, like, it is, it maybe, and maybe it, and I'm just spitballing here, what? Maybe it feels better than a memory, even, because it's like, oh, Vietnam is over in 6 minutes, you know?
Right,
and
yeah.
He gets shot, but he lives.
Right.
And Bubba dies, but he gave Bubba's mom.
But he was black.
Right. Jesus. But, so watching it now, watching the Jenny character, and I get it, you know, she is incredibly damaged. She is an abusive father, like, no mother, horrible father, abusive father. The whole theme with her is that she wants to be a bird and leave Alabama.
Far, far away.
That's right. And that's a kind of an overall theme in the movie, that everyone kind of leaves, and Forrest Gump obviously is drawn back to Alabama, his hometown of Greenbow, and Jenny wants nothing to do with it, but she can't, like, you know, ignore her roots. But she is a horrible person in a lot of ways, and you kind of want to say, well, there's reasons behind it, and it is Forrest Gump. He is like a simpleton, and why would she want to be with him? Because honestly, it's so easy to be like, oh, you're a horrible person, Jenny, but like, put yourself in her shoes. Like, you're not going to stick in Alabama with the simpleton. I don't know.
Right.
When you could go and do all these things, but really, it kind of hits you over the head with, like, no, she's horrible, and every time he opens up to her and does something for her, she treats him like shit, and fuck her. And then she, you know, spoiler, dies of an unknown virus, you know?
part of the problem, it's not a problem with the movie, is that they're not so much realistic characters so much as they are just, like, walking allegories, sort of, and, like, he's a symbol, and she's a symbol, and so she keeps going back to him because he's just, like, everyone in her life is horrible except for him. He's always decent. He's always supportive. So it's like, hey, I tried all this other shit. None of that works. Right. Let me go back to the one thing that has never let me down.
And I mean,
I'm sure there's some truth to that. There's a lot of the movie over the years has drawn a lot of criticism for the treatment of the Jenny character.
Yeah.
It has been called sexist and misogynist. And because Jenny is a character, who that the movie is so sort of conservative minded that it says, hey, if you have sex, if you experiment with drugs, if you drink, if you do these things that Jenny does by partaking in sort of the free love 60s or the whatever disco 70s or whatever, that ultimately
the opening scene from Lethal Weapon when she's on the balcony.
Exactly right. Off. Like you'll try and kill yourself or you'll die of AIDS. And like that's the lead female performance in the movie. And again, that argument I think is valid. Yeah. I think the movie supports that. But I think you can also kind of go the other way. And again, if the movie is being critical of America, and I do think in some ways it is, I think it's saying that Jenny is a victim of participating in America, that Forrest Gump sort of doesn't. He's this weird outside observer who sort of coasts through life.
Yeah, he's a victim of all these outside influences.
Jenny actually partakes in all of these things that are going on. She actually lives her life and is defeated as a result. The world kills her.
Jesus.
I don't know. That's
no, I think that's incredibly valid, and I haven't thought about that as much. I thought about it just as like, if the movie to me has always like been it's not a comedy. I mean, there's funny parts. It's not a drama, and there's definitely dramatic parts. Lots of people die. lots of bad things happen. It's a fantasy. It's this fantastical. Right. And I know we talked. I remember. I think during the Best of 2011 show, we talked about.
That was over a year ago.
Ghost Protes.
Oh yeah, Ghost Protes.
And JB had talked about how he liked it so much because it's a travelogue. How you just go from place to place to place, and it feels like a vacation. In a lot of ways, this is a time machine travelogue where, and even Forrest Gump's experience, the character Forrest Gump's experience, I mean, he goes from, you know, Alabama University playing football to Vietnam to playing ping pong, which is such a weird beat, by the way, to being on the Dick Cavett Show, all these different things. But coupled with the Jenny experience where she's out in Haight-Ashbury and she's, you know, free love and all that stuff, they cover everything almost, you know, and it's just kind of like, well, I guess that's one way to do it. And I guess one of them has to be the loser of the two stories because that's how stories are kind of structured. But it's bizarre. What I always find interesting too is that, I mean, okay, so Forrest Gump is a sweet, simple-minded whatever. And we identify with him, we respond to him because he's had these successes and whatever. And you said before, it's these vignettes, these kind of the montage scenes that are strung together through narration, through voiceover. Right. The way if we're to believe that, so he's going through all these moments, like he's in high school and college and, you know, Vietnam and stuff, and he's a much younger, you know, theoretically not wise guy, but we're hearing the voiceover of the older man on the bus stop telling these stories to the strangers that he's next to. Even as an older, theoretically wizened man, he's still a complete idiot. Like, he's like, I don't know. He, at one point he said,
no, he doesn't know that his money isn't invested in a fruit company.
Yeah, like, it's in a fruit company or something, and it's like, opens the letter from Apple.
Matt, right, like, yeah.
It's just kind of like, I always thought that was a little like, you know, well, I get that this guy could be of lesser intelligence and, you know, whatever, but to make it so broad and to kind of be insulting in that respect too, like, I think that even the quote dumbest guys in the world, when they're 40 or 50 or however old he might be, probably in his 40s, in the 80s, yeah, no, maybe in his late 30s if he's born in the 50s, I don't know, that even at that point he'd have a little knowledge and not be such a rube.
Right, somebody would have said, your money is in computers.
Yeah,
not your money's in a fruit company because you saw a picture of an apple. Like, right. You're not five. And again, the movie takes those shortcuts all the time,
and they do it for laughs. So
it's like it's this little punchline that I think is designed to make the audience feel clever. Like, oh, we see the apple, and that's different from what he's saying. I'm patting myself on the back now.
Absolutely.
Which is not a great way, I don't think, to construct your narrative.
No. But especially when you're supposed to identify. I mean, I keep saying identify. I'm not sure if we're supposed to identify or more like, are we supposed to laugh with him or laugh at him?
He's our tour guide.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think there's times where we're definitely supposed to laugh at him, but I don't think the movie holds him up to be ridiculed.
He almost seems to me, and this is just a thought I had right now, so it could be completely stupid, but like, just like a really good dog. Meaning like, He has no...
What was the original title of this
movie? A really good dog. In Brazil, I looked up, like, the alternate titles, and it's all Forrest Gump in all these different countries.
Yeah.
It's in Brazil, it's called Forrest Gump or The Storyteller. That's outstanding. But I'm thinking, like, you know, like, a good dog doesn't have any control over his environment. He just kind of, like, goes with the flow.
You're
and is
run
like,
with this. I appreciate that.
No, I swear to God, there's something here.
He shits on the ground.
That, he, you know, he's trained to a certain extent.
And
I'm saying a really good dog. Not a dog that
oh,
shits
outside,
on the...
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Please.
On the ground outside.
Grass. Right. But it's a dog that...
will take care of you when you're dying of AIDS.
But just, like, that doesn't know that you're a bad person. You know, like, if you're a horrible, miserable person and you are just lousy to everyone, you come home, your dog is going to wag its tail for you. And it's like, doesn't know that Jenny is treating him poorly. Doesn't know that
right.
the teacher fucked his mom.
Again, I think it's more of a child. Like, I go more to, like, oh, he has a child's mentality.
I'm saying some dogs are pretty smart.
And some kids are pretty hairy. So, actually...
yeah. You met that dog kid down the street? That kid's a total dog. I want to talk about also the... this movie, you mentioned it briefly earlier, that this movie is kind of championed by conservatives for being a conservative movie.
Yeah.
And I think Tom Hanks went on record and said, this movie's not political. The movie is apolitical, and it's just about stuff. It's not about politics. It doesn't say anything. It just exists and whatever. But of course, people can't leave that alone, so they you know, cling to whatever they see in it.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I think that conservatives probably do have a leg to stand on when they point to the movie and say, no, it's kind of saying that the clean life, this life, it's a rejection of the free love 60s. It's a rejection of all the things that Jenny is. But it's just, I think that's such a simple-minded view also.
Of course.
Well, right, yeah. But I just think it's funny, too, that, like, and then, of course, it came out in 94 when the whole, like, Newt Gingrich Congress came into power and kind of, it was the big coup that Clinton was, you know, whatever. And I find it so interesting that we're looking at Forrest Gump now as an allegory for politics, and pointing to this guy who is a simple dog as saying, no, that's the way America should be.
That's and see, that's what I'm getting at. These scenes that...
Get sort at of, it then.
These scenes that sort of point to that. There's the scene where he's in basic training pre-Vietnam and the drill instructor says...
You're a goddamn genius. Yeah,
yeah, like, Gump, why did you say that? Because you told me to or whatever. Like, you're a goddamn genius. You're going to do great.
That's why he has no emotion to say, like, I'm insulted by that.
But he succeeds because he's just blindly willing to follow orders.
Right.
You know what I mean? And again, I don't think the movie is being overtly critical because, yeah, you may have, and not to make this political, but, like, you could have a conservative faction who's like, yeah, that's what we need more of. People who just blindly follow orders. But I would assume a thinking person would say, like, yes, you may find success by doing exactly what you are told by those in power. However, you know, that may not be, as a person with free will, right? you may not want to do that.
Listen, stop playing devil's advocate.
The scene. Ooh, I'm the devil. Oh.
Free will, right?
Oh. You're in my law firm. That's my Al Pacino.
Sign this contract for your soul.
Is my Al Pacino slipping? I mean,
it sounds like De Niro.
Listen to him. Oh, I'm the devil. Is that?
Keep going.
Okay.
I'm the devil.
There it is.
Yes.
There it is.
You're welcome.
I'm heat. Right? Is that? I'm a stand-up guy.
I'm the heat miser. What? I don't know. I'm gonna have a conversation with you in a diner. This makes no sense.
I mean, the other scene, and it's the sequence that I've always sort of had the biggest problem with, but watching the movie this time, I was like, wait, this supports my reading of the movie, is the whole sequence at the end where he runs, and it's, like, it's interminable. It's like Bob Seger is playing, and it just, like, your movie clock says, okay, the movie should be ending,
yeah.
But oh no, we got a 15-minute sequence where he just runs. For no reason, he just runs. There's no payoff, he just runs. But again, it makes the argument that, like, he becomes this hero, and people blindly follow him for no reason. They don't know what he's doing, and it turns out either does he. He doesn't have a purpose. He's not running towards anything. He literally just, on a whim, decided to run, well, and everyone's like, let's do what that guy's doing.
It's coming on the heels of Jenny rejecting him, like, for the 15th time, so he's like, I'm gonna start running.
Right.
And it's, yeah, you're right. I always thought that sequence was so interesting, too, because so much of the movie up until that point is very, like, and I think even this is how it was sold, is like, he's just involved in all these, in every historical thing. Like, he meets Kennedy, he meets Johnson, he is there for the, whatever, the desegregation. And then when he's running, he says shit happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, he invents a bumper sticker and a smiley face, have a nice day t-shirt.
Yeah.
The guy's like, oh, I got all these yellow t-shirts left, man.
A guy who lost Dave's a bunch of money in t-shirts. Like, that's the narration. Like, he had lost a lot of money with a t-shirt business. Like,
what? I only got these yellows left.
And then even, like, the smiley, what? The smiley face? That makes no sense.
No. When he wipes it out. What's funny, though, too,
I do like the punchline of the, not the shit happens punchline, but I do like the hard, like, the cut on the car accident.
Yeah, well.
It's a clever little thing, because it cuts away, like, very quickly, which I like.
I just thought it was funny, as a kid, or not a kid, but at, like, 16 when I saw the movie.
Yeah, a kid.
I did.
A
16-year-old kid. Not a dog. I did like those beats.
Yeah.
Because, again, I probably was one of the audience members.
It's
like, kind of
rewarding, right.
Yeah, like, oh, I get that. And even though I didn't get it, because I wasn't, like, alive in the mid-70s to, like, appreciate the counterculture, or have a nice day, smiley face t-shirt.
Right.
But I got it enough.
Right.
But now as I'm watching, I'm like, no, no, no.
Right.
Like,
it feels forced and unnecessary.
What's the song? What's the Bob Seger song that it's...
Against the Wind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's another one too, Running on Empty by Jackson Brown.
Can you please give me a...
I will not, but Frank Ocean might know how that goes.
Running on Empty.
So yeah, watching it this time, I was like, well, this definitely supports my whole theory of the movie, that this weird simpleton succeeds and becomes a hero by accident. Like, he doesn't have a plan.
He's
not standing for anything. People are just like, let's do what he's doing.
And that's why
we're a society of just followers.
Way early on, just saying, like, what is the movie? I know what the movie's about. Like, it's about a man who just, like, is in histories, you know, all these interesting situations. Like, he's a victim of circumstance. He just has these opportunities, but he doesn't even seize the opportunities. They just, like, happen to him.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it, too, but what is it, like, what is it saying? And I guess that's what people are debating. Like, conservatives say it's this, and liberals, I don't know, I'm not saying it's conservative-liberal thing, I'm just saying there's different viewpoints.
Liberals change the argument.
Right.
I want to say that it's about sort of what I'm saying it's about, that it's sort of this critique, in a way, of 30 years of American history through the eyes of this neutral observer.
Or two, you could argue two observers, the Jenny part too.
Well, but see, Jenny's where it complicates things. So if it's just focusing on Forrest Gump, who stumbles into all these historical things and sort of comments on them without understanding what any of them mean and finds success without understanding how he got there and all these things, that's a movie that I'm into, and that's great. And I don't know if it's Zemeckis or if it's from the book. You said it was played less of a part in the book, or if it's the screenplay by Eric Roth?
Eric Roth,
he wrote Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which is the same goddamn movie, but way worse.
Yeah.
But it has so many of the same beats
as
this movie. That they have to add in all this other stuff to sort of make it a more inviting movie, or a more commercial or audience friendly. So we layer in this love story throughout it. We have all the stuff with the mom and the floating feather. And, like, that's all the quote unquote humanity that I'm like, no, get that out of the movie.
The humanity, right.
Take that away.
Make it more subversive.
I don't want any of that.
What kind of director is Robert Zemeckis? I mean, his body of work is so weird.
Yeah.
I know, I think you touched on it earlier, and I think it's interesting to say, like, he is a controlling director. He wants to control every frame, but, like, what is his vision? What is his...
Well, it's so weird, too, because in the early days, you know, he wrote 1941, which is a mess, but he wrote and directed Used Cars.
Yeah.
He wrote and directed I Want to Hold Your Hand, and I'm not the world's biggest I Want to Hold Your Hand fan, but it's interesting to see.
You like Can't Buy Me Love more, I believe.
It's interesting to see... I like Backbeat. You're confusing it with Backbeat.
Backbeat.
He plays some of the same tricks in I Want to Hold Your Hand as he would years later in Forrest Gump. But those three movies are sort of defined by chaos. Like, just large scale destruction and just used cars is a great comedy, but it's like a comedy of just craziness and chaos. And then the further into his career you get, the more sort of weirdly insulated he gets and controlling.
That's the case, I think, with a lot of directors. They,
I guess,
get more power and get more free will to do
free will, right?
To do what they, they want to do.
I'm romancing the stone.
Very nice.
Thank you.
I'm the jewel of the Nile.
That's another movie that I was,
I know,
as a kid. Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Let's go see Three Men and a Little Lady. God damn it, this sucks too.
In the meantime, I was watching The Efficiency Expert, so I feel you. I forgot what I was going to say about Zemeckis just being a great director. I liked Flight. Castaway is one of my favorites of his.
I like Castaway.
Yeah, it's great. I don't know.
I like a lot of his movies. It's interesting that this is the movie that, you know, sooner or later, a certain class of director is going to be honored, recognized. You know what I mean? Like, eventually we have to land on that guy for his body of work or whatever. And so with Zemeckis, it was Forrest Gump. And I guess it just the timing was right and the culture really embraced the movie. It became kind of this phenomenon.
It's become such a phenomenon.
And so this was the movie that everybody said, like, yep, that's his masterpiece. But far from it, I think.
Yeah.
Again, I still like the movie, even though I recognize, boy, it has a lot of problems.
I'm just amazed at, like...
I don't know. Is this his most... I don't think this is the most representative...
No.
...movie of him as a director, but...
No, I don't think so either. Beowulf, I think, is...
Definitely...
Polar Express.
Beowulf.
I am blanking. I forgot what I was going to say again,
That it has caught on, that it is a phenomenon.
So. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
If you want to cut that out, by all means.
I know.
I'm just amazed at how it is this thing that even... almost 20 years later, everyone knows it. Everyone knows the beats. Gary Sinise has the Lieutenant Dan band.
Yeah.
Which, you know, good for him. He's doing this. His band is...
They're burning up the charts.
No, what he does is strictly like USO shows. Yeah. And like, oh, he benefits all the soldiers and stuff. And it's like, it's such a great thing to do.
I'm just like you. I played a soldier in a movie.
Well, it's such a great thing to do when you could easily take it and just be cynical and like just be an asshole or whatever.
Yeah,
he's just like, he does, if he wants to play, like a lot of actors want to be a rock stars and vice versa. And he's doing it kind of, and he's kind of helping the people that, you know, I guess
he's
portrayed. He is. But I just think it's interesting so much of it too. I mean, if you interview Sally Field, of course, right now it's all Lincoln, but it's like people probably remember Forrest Gump and they forget all the, you know, like the stuff in the 60s and 70s and whatever.
Flying Nun, they forget.
Right. Yeah. Or Smokey and the Bandit to Heath Holland's point. I'm just kind of blown away by like what the movie has become and how people still have, like you mentioned before about, we actually have a friend of ours who has always hated the movie. And I was always kind of like, how could you hate it? Like, I get that it's not your cup of tea, but it's like, how could you just hate this movie? And I guess people dig their heels in and, you know, it is what it is, especially 20 years later when they don't want to see it again. And it's just become more of a cartoon in their heads, you know?
Yeah, I think to a lot of people, this movie represents a lot of what's wrong with like that sort of awards bait, feel good Hollywood movies. And my issue with that argument was always because I just always felt like, but the movie's not like as feel good as you are claiming. But I've never really bothered to like try and make that argument. I've always just kind of like said that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think this is the closest I've come to pointing out like specific examples of like, see, but it's also this other thing. So I get it. I don't know. Every time I was like, hey, this movie is kind of smart and subversive, we get to like the scene where Gary Sinise jumps off the boat and swims into the water after thanking Forrest for saving his life.
It's a CGI like sunset.
Right.
Like, very.
And the first time I saw it, I really was convinced that like, is he killing himself? Because like, how's he going to swim?
Right.
And Forrest Gump in voiceover says like, he didn't say it, but I'm pretty sure he made his peace with God that day.
Right.
And I was like, why does that line need to be in the movie?
Right,
why do you need to make explicit the subtext?
We're obviously not filmmakers, but I know...
Hold on.
I know. You have that one project in the can, so to speak. But I do know, like, from taking film studies classes and just researching and all that stuff, it's like, you know, show, don't tell.
Right.
And this movie tells everything. So there's not...
Yeah.
That, and maybe that's why it's so populist. Because it is like, it's... Everyone can... Everyone is on the same exact page.
Right.
It's not a movie where, I like, I'll make a dumb not a comparison, but example of American Beauty. People hate it and they don't understand it or they get it, but they don't... Do you have a podcast on American Beauty?
We don't. Do you want to do one right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to scrap all this, everybody. Ignore everything we just said. Wait, no. Don't ignore
what we... What does this button do?
Don't ignore what we just said. What I want you to do is apply everything we just said to American Beauty.
Right. So, like, Forrest Gump, but for American Beauty.
Exactly.
So the bag is the feather.
Kind of, yes. Yes.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, I think I was the one pushing for the show because I hadn't seen the movie in a long time. I'm talking about American Beauty. No, I haven't seen
That's what we're talking about now.
I haven't seen Forrest Gump in a long time. And I'm like, I kind of want to see it again because I wanted to kind of go through this. Like, yeah, what? Right. Why is it I have such fond memories for it? And why do, you know, why do some people hate it? And I don't know if I'm any closer to understanding anything about it, but it was interesting nonetheless.
It's certainly a movie, to your point, like, that it's super kind of populist, but it also, like, makes people feel clever.
Yeah.
And I understand resisting that and being like, fuck you. Like, don't insult my intelligence by trying to make me feel clever for getting that dumb reference.
Sure. Well, for as much as you might feel that sometimes, too, like, some parts are so saccharine and dripping with just, like, sentimentality or whatever. It just zips along, and it's masterfully made in that you just can kind of sit there and let the movie happen to you.
Yeah, and, on a technical level, it's all really good.
And not have to think about anything. I remember... It's such a dumb story, but The Hunt for Red October is not, like, an excellent movie. I actually like the movie
a lot.
A lot
of people would probably disagree with you.
I think I like the movie a lot. People love it. I like the movie a lot, yeah. No,
I've seen it once and never since.
I will watch it often. In fact, Mike from the podcast has gotten me the Jack Ryan box set, which is, I think, only the Harrison Ford movies,
not The Sum of All Fears.
Not The Sum of All Fears, no. Is that Affleck?
Great movie. That is Affleck.
Okay, no, it's only the...
I don't remember any of it.
Red October, Patriot Games, and Clear and Present Danger, which I don't think I've even seen. It's kind of a garbage, Clear and Present Danger.
That was the only one I saw in the theater.
Okay.
I don't know why. I don't remember any of it.
Red October, I actually like it.
Get off my plane!
I like it a lot, but I realize it's a flawed movie, as every movie is, and no movie's perfect, blah, blah, blah. But I remember watching this movie with my dad, and I think he might have fallen asleep during the middle of it, so that doesn't help his case. But I remember at the end of it, he was kind of, like, confused as to, like, and it's the movie, if you don't know, and I'm sure you do know, it's about, like, a person... some Russians want to, you know, flee their country and have, you know, what do you call it?
Defect?
Defect to America and share this...
I'm just borrowing your submarine.
Right. And I remember at the end of it, it's not a thinking movie by any means, but there are some twists and some turns, and I think, again, my dad fell asleep, so he kind of didn't quite understand everything that was happening. But at the end, he was kind of like, well, what's going on? And my point simply to say this, and again, I'm not focusing on Red October or my father's experience with said movie, but it's more to say that I think when movies do throw those wrenches out there, sometimes audiences who are not just devoted moviegoers and or people that want to give their life to 2 hours of something to think about it, and there's lots of people out there like that,
sure,
they don't respond to it as much. Where I thought Red October was great because I'm like, yeah, oh, this is like, it was so, you know, this, I was thinking this, but this happened instead. And my dad was like, I just, you know, he kind of tuned out for a little bit because it was probably boring to him, or he fell asleep. And then by the time the end came, he was confused and then wrote it off. Whereas Forrest Gump has none of that. It is like you watch it from start to finish and it is like we have to be dumber than Forrest Gump to get lost in the movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. The last thing I'll say is there is one scene that Tom Hanks does that I've always liked, and watching it this time, obviously, it was way more heavy-handed than it was in my memory, but I remember seeing it, and possibly even getting choked up in 94, and I was, like, in high school or whatever. At the end, when he first meets his son, who sees all the ghosts, he finds out that it's his son, and his immediate thought is he's worried that his son is...
Yeah,
of low intelligence the way he is, and that always really struck me, not only is because it's the first thing that pops into his head, like that's his first concern, like is he smart, but it's also the first and I think only time in the movie that we realize that Forrest Gump has self-awareness.
Right. Oh, no other scenes would show you that even in, like, we bought a fruit company, like, you are, you know, like
right.
So it's almost, you know,
That he has an awareness of his own limitations. And to me, that casts, not the whole movie, I wouldn't say, in a new light, but it does, it's about the only thing about his character that, like,
shows introspection,
that shows any depth to the character. Yeah. Yeah, otherwise it's just like I blindly walk through life, you know, and I'm
it almost
nice
opens up a can of worms though too, because if he really does think that about himself, mm-hmm. and he wants his son to not have the life that he had, like, does he have a I'm implying here
sure,
or inferring or whatever the proper terminology is. But it's like he's led kind of a charmed life,
right?
In fact, I believe the Kurt Russell rule applies to his early days. When the, you know the Elvis scene?
Yeah.
It's voiced by Kurt Russell.
No, I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
I say that like, you didn't know that? Like, I just found out like 2 days ago.
No, I guess that's who you go to, right?
In the opening,
Russell was the first guy to play Elvis.
In one of the first.
And he does have a relationship with Zemeckis, going back to used cars.
For the listeners, in one of the first scenes where he meets up with Elvis, Elvis is always kind of out of focus.
Yeah.
And the voice like, hey, show me that move again with the hip swivel and hound dog.
Hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah. It's Kurt Russell.
I'm Elvis.
What's the Kurt Russell rule, Patrick?
Kurt Russell rules.
That's right. But yeah, I think it opens a can of worms, almost like, well, why would he think that? I mean, I guess we always want people to be smart, but would that make you think that he has complaints about his life?
No, and I never took that away from that moment. You know, I don't think he's like, oh, I don't want him to be simple or you know, for lack of a better word, like kind of dumb like me, because it'll be too hard for him, you know, to get through life. He's a millionaire and he's had all these adventures and all that. I don't think that's what it's about. I think it's just, you get this glimpse that like there's part of Forrest Gump that's like a prisoner inside of himself, and he doesn't want that for his son. And that's,
you know,
interesting,
so,
I thought.
So interesting that how memory, I remember like lines we just said about how that one scene.
I remember
a
that
little...
Kurt Russell voiced Elvis, and I always knew that, and I always was like telling people that. It was like my thing that I knew about the movie.
You said one of your favorite scenes was that realization, and it was. You said also that in watching it again, it was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah,
and my memory of certain lines of dialogue is so different, and how it's played in the movie. And specifically, when he's a boy and he walks on the bus.
You can't sit here.
In my head, the boy in the back of the bus who has an empty seat next to him goes, you can't sit here.
Which is the way we've said it ever since.
Oh my God.
Only because that's how you said it.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Because that's how it was in the
and
movie.
Erica
in my head.
Always does seats taken, which I also don't think is how they say
no.
it. But for some reason, both of you guys picked up on different kids refusing to let
Forrest
sit down.
Right.
Neither moment which ever stood out in my memory.
Right. Yeah. So, Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. The line, of course, that caught on in pop culture is, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get, which also doesn't make any goddamn sense when you, like, when you apply any scrutiny.
No, it does. I think that line makes sense. It's like, I mean, disregarding that most chocolate boxes have the descriptions of the chocolates on the back of the box, but it's like you eat a box of chocolates, it's like you bite into it, I don't know if it's cherry or nougat or whatever. That's what I think it's just like. You approach something,
kind
you eat it.
Kind of a weak metaphor.
It, absolutely. It's just like stupid as a stupid does. For the longest time, I had no idea what that meant.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I didn't look it up, but I was like asking, and it was like, oh, because you're... If you're smart but you act stupid, you're stupid. And if you're stupid but you act smart, you're not considered stupid.
I do
stupid.
Love his delivery on "I was running." he has a few of those that crack me up. Very last thing I'll say.
No,
the other line always sticks.
No,
you know how in Saving Private Ryan, which also stars Tom Hanks, the line that we often reference in Saving Private Ryan is when the old man,
it's the bookends,
Matt Damon says, "Have I led a good life?" And the wife says,
"What?"
And I don't know if she says that or if that's how she says it.
No, she. It's the old man, Matt Damon, says, "Have I led a good life?" Like, very simply.
Yeah.
And the wife responds with, like, "What?" But in our heads, it's like, "Have I led a good life?" And she is pronounced in her, "What?" Because at this point, I mean, I love that movie, but I also acknowledge that the bookends are bullshit, you know? But at that point, it's like, I don't care if you had a good life. Go back to the sticky bombs.
So the line in Forrest Gump that reminded me of the "What?" was the old lady at the bus stop.
Oh, God. I know what you're going to say.
So you just ran.
Oh, my. And that's not exaggerated.
No. It's so bizarre.
All right. She is definitely out of a weird, like, central casting. Like, we need a person with a southern affect who can be genial next to this.
And
crazy
who
guy.
Can sit on a bus stop.
Right.
Hopefully, somebody with gout, maybe?
Right.
I don't know.
So you just read. What you need to do is read a cold.
Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you to Frank Ocean for being this podcast house band.
Forrest Gump.
And for giving me a little handy under the table.
Well, he's that's going to be.
As am I. He's very famous. Anyway, thank you, Douglas.
Your new website's Famous Handies.
.net.
You couldn't get .com again?
No.
Hoo-ah!